exceptions. With these smart systems in place, we're able to shift people from repetitive, non-thinking work to more productive activities, says Keith Bogg, Marks & Spencer's Divisional Director for IT and Logistics. They use their intelligence to deal only with the exceptions, letting the computers make decisions about everything else. We can redeploy those people to do new product selection, market analysis, and other value-added activities instead of babysitting daily stock. Buyers are spending their time much more effectively, adding a lot more value than they were before. Using software to handle routine data chores gives you the opportunity to provide the human touch where it really matters. There's a pretty dramatic difference between getting a note that was clearly written by a person versus a computer-generated form letter, or receiving a phone call about some new product or special event from a person versus a computer. It's of incredible value to have a person working with a customer who is unhappy about something really important or who has special needs. In a hotel, for instance, smart software can dramatically shorten the check-in and check-out time and solicit routine feedback, freeing up staff time. How much more would people enjoy their hotel stay if there were half a dozen additional people acting as a concierge instead of as a clerk? Electronic commerce, though, brings new challenges. In a physical store, a salesperson can use clues such as the customer's questions, dress style, and body language to better assess interests. However, on a web store, no one sees the customer, and the goal is to let the customer do as much shopping as possible for himself or herself. Web store owners have an interesting piece of detective work. Based on customer browsing behavior and purchase history, how do you construct a model of who the shopper is? It requires sophisticated data analysis capability. Digital tools slice and dice. In most business organizations, people need to see information in a variety of ways. Senior executives often want to see a consolidated view of sales, then a view by region, then by country. Sales managers want to see numbers by team and individual sales, or by customer accounts. Product managers want to see numbers by sales channel, or to drill down to see what SKUs, stock-keeping units, are selling well or poorly. Different people need to see month and year-to-date sales, actual sales versus budget, year-over-year changes in sales, and sales in U.S. dollars or other currencies. Typically, a company's finance department produces a very large number of separate reports to meet these various business needs. Often, all of these reports can be produced digitally using an electronic spreadsheet. Outline controls enable business people to begin at a summary level and click on any item in order to drill into successive levels of detail. Another capability, known as pivot tables, enables people to see the same data in multiple ways. If you're viewing sales by salesperson and you want to shift to a view by customer, you change the view by dragging the customer label to the proper row position. When these capabilities are combined with templates that build the underlying data into standard formats, the results are powerful, flexible digital reports that each person can personalize to meet specific needs. Such reports can also be emailed around for further analysis and discussion. Pivot tables are particularly powerful when combined with a company's data warehouse. Each database in the warehouse usually has limited reporting capabilities, restricting creation to more technical personnel. Typically, people aren't sure when they will need additional detail, so they do massive database queries that might take 20 to 30 minutes to run. Pivot tables linked to a database extends data warehouse access to all business users, and a spreadsheet interface enables users to do summary-level queries and refine them step-by-step to obtain more detail. With little data involved with each refresh of the data, response is very fast. This interface can extend to a dynamic data source such as real-time stock market feeds. For the business person, digital tools mean faster and deeper analysis. For accountants, digital tools mean less time spent producing reports and more time assisting with business analysis and exploring exceptions. For the people managing business data, digital tools mean much faster and higher quality information, with monthly closings taking a couple of days instead of weeks. With the same headcount, finance departments can then take on assignments involving new data, such as long-term planning and analysis of headcount usage or fixed assets. What digital tools do that paper reports cannot is give everyone the ability to ask the next question. Because you never know what that question is going to be, you need tools that help you explore the answers on your own. extending the reach of human analysis. Digital analytical tools, such as the ones Marks and Spencer uses, which enable people to focus only on exceptions rather than on the routine, are also changing the nature of work. The tools are so powerful that some Marks and Spencer employees were initially afraid they'd be replaced by computers. There's a natural resistance to giving up any decision-making function and letting a machine do it. When a database gets big enough and complex enough, though, the computer can do the initial searching and sorting far better than a human being. We're simply incapable of recognizing patterns in large amounts of data. And the available data in databases, file systems, messaging systems, and websites is growing exponentially. The only way we can get the full value of all of this data is to use computer tools to get at it and sift it for actionable information. Using software algorithms to find useful patterns in large amounts of data is called data mining. The first major step in data mining was online analytical processing, OLAP, which makes many kinds of querying much more efficient. Data originally collected for accounting and bookkeeping purposes was recognized as a potential mine of information for modeling, prediction, and decision support. Companies began creating corporate data stores, or data warehouses, to satisfy these new demands for business analysis. Data subsets focused on one aspect or department of a business are often called data marts. HarperCollins, the publishing company, uses a PC-based OLAP system to track book sales in real time, so that it can print just enough books to meet distributor demand. That way, HarperCollins won't be caught with large stocks of unsold copies in the channel, which publishers have to take back as returns. After only a year in operation, the new system has helped HarperCollins reduce returns of unsold copies on its most popular titles from over 30% to about 10%. Each percentage point represents millions of dollars in savings. Its OLAP system enables HarperCollins to ask questions such as, what was the profitability of this title this week with this distributor? But OLAP needs a human being to direct the querying, and neither traditional databases nor OLAP can find answers in the data for less well-defined but important business questions such as, which of my customers is likely to prefer product A over product B? What distinguishes my satisfied customers from my unsatisfied customers? Which customers in my database are similar to other customers in my database? The results of non-specific queries such as these would swamp the user of an OLAP system and wouldn't be meaningful. Sophisticated forms of data mining will use software to navigate an information-rich environment, helping users answer business questions without requiring them to be experts in statistics, data analysis, or databases. Among the challenges that data mining can help with are these: predicting the likelihood of customers buying a specific item based on their age, gender, demographics, and other affinities, identifying customers with similar browsing behaviors, identifying specific customer preferences in order to provide improved individual service, identifying the date and times involved in sequences of frequently visited web pages or frequent episodes of phone calling patterns, finding all groups of items that are brought together with high frequency. This final technique is usually valuable for merchants to uncover buying patterns, but a correlation between two billing codes for the same procedure enabled an Australian healthcare provider to uncover more than $10 million in double billing fraud. Data mining is also a valuable tool for forecasting sales and sharing that analysis with partners and customers. Data mining is being used in manufacturing, banking, telecommunications, planetary geology, remote sensing, and in running interactive web stores. By recognizing patterns of consumer activity on a website, for instance, Microsoft Site Server Commerce 3.0 can predict shopper interests and can customize the online shopping experience for each visitor. Web stores can tailor ads, promotions, and cross-selling offers for every visitor. Data mining techniques can also ensure that an online store doesn't send a mass emailing to its customers with offers they're unlikely to be interested in, avoiding a cost that is often ignored, the price of annoying customers with irrelevant information. Some less typical but interesting applications of data mining include analysis of foster children records to help design better social services, and the scouting of NBA basketball players. Data mining gave the Utah Jazz basketball team a complete profile on every tendency of the Chicago Bulls' Michael Jordan, including an isolation play in which he takes two or three dribbles before pulling up for a jumper. Analysis is only as good as your ability to execute, though. Even knowing Jordan's profile, Utah couldn't stop him from using that dribble move to hit the winning shot in the game that gave Chicago the 1998 NBA championship. The most common business use of data mining is for database marketing, in which companies analyze data to discover customer preferences and then make targeted offers to specific sets of consumers. For example, American Airlines uses information about the 26 million members of its frequent flyer program, such as the rental car companies, hotels, and restaurants they use, to develop targeted marketing efforts that have saved more than $100 million in costs. Cost savings come from the ability to create more precise models of customers and reduce the amount of mailings. A direct marketing campaign for something like credit cards, for instance, would normally generate a return of about 2%. Mellon Bank USA, in 1997, had a target of acquiring 200,000 new accounts, a number that would require mailing offers to 10 million prospects. Instead, the bank used data mining techniques to produce 3,000 models of the most likely prospects. A subset of the models was refined to create a smaller number that, testing showed, would generate a response rate of 12%. This rate enabled the bank to mail only about 2 million offers to acquire the desired 200,000 customers, instead of mailing to the original population of 10 million. In addition to reducing cost, the average profitability of an acquired customer was 3 times higher than usual, because data mining had targeted the customers whose needs best matched Mellon Bank's services. This example illustrates two important aspects of data mining. The first is the sheer scale of it. The amount of data involved and the number of models explored are far beyond traditional statistical analysis. The second is that even highly trained specialists can benefit from data mining, as seen in the Mellon Bank example, by the ability of an outside team to get 6 times the results in 1/4 the time of customary methods used by an in-house dedicated statistical analysis department. A major goal is making the tool so easy that the business end user, not a specialist, can apply them. Data mining will become a requirement for online interaction. Lars Nyberg, chairman and CEO of NCR, described to me the standard menu his bank ATM prompts him with. Does he want instructions in English or Spanish? Which account does he want to access? What kind of transaction does he want? And when he's done, does he want to do another transaction? At the end, the ATM displays an ad with a phone number to call if he wants a mortgage from that bank. Most ATM users have worked through a menu like this. Yet Lars withdraws the same amount of money from the same account almost every time he uses the ATM. He already has a mortgage from this bank and pays them a lot of money every month for it. When he puts in his bank card, why doesn't the machine ask him in the language he usually uses, "Lars, would you like your normal withdrawal from your primary account?" And why doesn't it promote a service he doesn't already use, one that fits his customer profile? Such specialized service would be better for him and better for the bank. The information needed to create these more relevant questions is in a computer somewhere. NCR actually makes the ATM for Lars's bank and is developing a major practice in data mining. Lars is keen on solving these kinds of problems for his customers. Data mining is part of customer relationship management, CRM, in which information technology helps companies manage customer relationships on a one-to-one basis instead of on the mass marketing model. Data mining is actionable for reaching the individual customer when there is a channel for customized delivery, whether it's an ATM or a website or direct marketing via email promotions and offers. With the patterns revealed by data mining, you can present your products to a customer in a way that's most likely to increase your value to him and his value to you. This personalization has profound implications for advertising in all media, including television and magazines. As digital TV becomes prevalent and electronic books become the preferred way to read magazines and newspapers, virtually all advertising will move away from mass advertising to personalized advertising. The ads that appear on screen will differ according to the demographic profiles of the viewer. Instead of having to buy every household in the United States with mass media to advertise a car or other item, companies will be able to buy the demographic that's most efficient to reach their potential customers. If, for instance, somebody's already bought a certain type of car, and you think the time frame is right for him or her to be in the market for a new one, you could target that customer narrowly. A big car company may still buy other demographics to keep its brand awareness high, but would focus its advertising on the best demographics. We're already seeing personalization a tiny bit on the web. If a user types in a location in a search engine, San Francisco, for example, or indicates that he or she wants to buy a book related to travel or certain other topics, an ad about that location or topic comes up along with the other information. A context-sensitive ad, which you can associate with a customer's preference or something that the person is trying to do, is worth dramatically more than a generic hit-or-miss ad. The ability to personalize ads means that different neighborhoods or even different households in the same area could be seeing different ads. Big companies can become more efficient with their advertising, and small companies can begin to consider TV and magazine ads for the first time. Today, many advertising vehicles are too expensive for any but true mass-market products. Even the corner grocer would have the potential to afford TV ads for people living near the store. Targeted ads should make consumers happy. They're more likely to see ads that are relevant to them. Some people may be concerned about advertisers having too much information about them, but as I say in Chapter 7, software will make it possible for consumers to reveal only the information they want to reveal. Giving advertisers access to viewing patterns is not unreasonable, as just one example. Most subscribers to a specialty publication, whether the topic is sports, science, gardening, homemaking, or autos, peruse the ads as carefully as the articles. If you watch TV in the same way, primarily for one or two interests, you probably wouldn't object to seeing ads focusing on those interests. Soap operas, that staple of daytime TV in the United States, are so named because the advertisers were traditionally the big soap companies, going after the audience of largely female viewers. So the idea of targeted TV marketing is not new. The dimensions of it are radically different, though, with data mining as a way of gleaning information and digital TV and electronic books as a way of narrowly targeting the audience in a more personal way. The combination will bring very much a revolution in how you think of advertising and marketing. Personalization greatly increases the value of understanding whom you want to target with your products and services. Getting the most out of data mines for everyone. Today, most data mining systems are quite expensive, ranging from $25,000 to $150,000 for a small or medium-sized business to millions of dollars for a high-end customer such as Walmart. One insurance company spent more than $10 million for a data mining solution 5 years ago. The CEO said he knew he could obtain the same solution for a good deal less money with today's technology, but the results had been worth the $10 million investment. That remark gives an indication of the value of data mining, but these high prices reflect the old-world order of software complexity, in which only the largest organizations, using a lot of staff or hiring specialized vendors, could make good use of data. With the growth of competition in our information-based economy, customer data has become an increasingly important asset. Every company and every knowledge worker at a company has an imperative to get the most out of the company's data assets. These new users can't afford big database budgets or specialized database experts. Fortunately, as data mining capabilities become available on the high-volume PC platform, you'll see prices drop dramatically and the use of data mining explode in companies and departments of all sizes. Soon, every business user will be able to do the high-end analysis that used to be reserved for the companies that could shell out big bucks. Data mining will become pervasive, a standard capability of every business's information system infrastructure. The greatest value of data mining will be to help companies determine the right products to build and the right way to price them. Companies will be able to evaluate a variety of packaging options and price points to see which ones are most appealing to customers and profitable to themselves. Such capabilities are of special interest to companies that sell information products. Unlike a car or chair, products such as insurance, financial services, and books have far more cost tied up in development than in production, and have a value determined more by the customer than by the physical cost of goods. The secret to success with information products is understanding the profile and buying habits of your most likely customer. Insurance companies, for instance, have products that are very profitable with some customers and less profitable or unprofitable with others. The difference is related to loss experience with policyholder claims. Data mining can provide an insurance company with the customer profiles and geographies where its loss experience is very low or very high. The company can determine whether to do heavy marketing and attractive pricing to people in an age group or geography with good loss experience, and whether to raise prices or do less marketing in groups with bad loss experience. When you have that kind of variability, it's worth a lot to do data mining to help develop your product strategy. Banks have similar opportunities to use data mining to target new customers. People are now more willing to switch banks, and there are many new financial services companies. Banks will have to do a lot more marketing to acquire customers, and this marketing will pay off only if they figure out which customers are most valuable. But you always have to ask what's actionable. If your customer profiles are quite similar, or your customer base is small, data mining is not nearly as actionable. A grocer selling specialty items to a small neighborhood clientele probably doesn't need to do data mining. A national grocery chain does. The powerful capabilities of data mining will help companies determine how to acquire new customers, whom to market to, how to tailor and price their products, and how to attract individual customers. Human creativity and skill are needed to use this information to come up with the new packaging and pricing approaches, to see the seed for new products in the patterns the computer returns, and to figure out intriguing new offers. The better tools they have, the more creative they can be. Management needs to invest in advanced tools that enhance people's jobs. You should budget 3-4% of the salary of your knowledge workers to make sure they have the best tools, which free people to direct their mental energies toward finding creative responses to the patterns and trends identified by the computer. Using information to develop innovative new products and services and to collaborate more closely with partners and customers will always remain a uniquely human endeavor. As software extracts more and more ore from the mine of information, people will always have work turning it into gold. Business lessons. Analytical software enables you to shift human resources from rote data collection to value-added customer service and support, where the human touch makes a profound difference. Apply software analysis first to those aspects of your business where you are most able to act on the results. Consider how the move from mass advertising to targeted advertising will change your marketing approach. Diagnosing your digital nervous system. Can you do sophisticated analysis of customer buying patterns and use the results for either trend analysis or individualized service? Can you determine which customer groups are the most profitable and the most unprofitable for you by income, age group, geography, or other demographics? Do your digital systems enable people to shift from dealing with the routine to dealing with the exceptions? Do your employees have easy digital access to numbers? Can they go from summaries to detailed data? Can they see numbers in different dimensions and pivot across those dimensions? Chapter 14. Raise Your Corporate IQ. An organization's ability to learn and translate that learning into action rapidly is the ultimate competitive advantage. Jack Welch, Chairman, General Electric. A few years ago, we discovered we were missing some blueprints for the existing buildings on our Redmond campus. We needed the blueprints as background for our next stage of construction. Our longtime head of real estate and facilities had just retired, so we had to call him up at home to see if he knew where the plans were. He directed us to an electrician, who fortunately still worked with one of our outside vendors. Sure enough, the electrician had the blueprints. In fact, that electrician was the only person in the world who had all of the plans for all of our buildings. Traditional societies often rely on one or two people to remember the group's history and traditions, but modern organizations need a better way to record and pass on their folklore. Yet at Microsoft, we were relying pretty much on oral tradition too. Here we were, the largest developer of office space in the Seattle area, embarking on a period of construction in which we would put up between 500,000 and 1,000,000 square feet of new office space a year, and our entire knowledge base of crucial information was being carried around in the heads of just a few people, and in a few stacks of blueprints we didn't even have on file. Alarmed by this incident, the Microsoft Real Estate and Facilities Group decided we needed a digital repository to preserve and augment all the knowledge we'd accumulated over 2 decades of construction. We put all of our blueprints, diagrams, and other construction information into computer-aided design, CAD, files, and created a CAD standard for our vendors to implement going forward. We moved existing electronic documents from vendor systems into our in-house system. Then we created an extranet site for our vendors to access for as long as they are part of a project. Everyone has access to records of problems and solutions from earlier phases of construction. Because we've regained control of the information, we can bid out projects more broadly to get better pricing and flexibility. Our business and financial planners use the extranet site to prepare for an office expansion of the opening of a new subsidiary. Microsoft personnel can get educated on issues and costs related to major real estate projects, and international groups can use our main campus real estate expertise as they plan for business development. Floor plans are also posted on our intranet, so space planners in separate buildings on our main campus can view the same floor plans as they discuss major moves. Regular employees use the floor plan page to see where their new offices will be after a move. In fact, except for a brief flurry of visitors to the food page while we were changing cafeteria vendors, the floor plan page has been the most commonly visited spot on our intranet. Defining knowledge management. Our electronic real estate library and a similar one on trademarks and patent law are examples of corporate knowledge management. As a general concept, to gather and organize information, disseminate the information to the people who need it, and constantly refine the information through analysis and collaboration. Knowledge management is useful. But like re-engineering before it, knowledge management has become infused with almost any meaning somebody wants to associate with it. News articles on the topic, analysis, and even reviews of the category appear regularly. Consulting practices and websites are devoted to knowledge management, and a knowledge management magazine started up in mid-1998. If reporters talk to a database company, they find that knowledge management is the newest thing in databases. If reporters talk to a groupware company, they find that knowledge management means the next generation of groupware. So let's be clear on a couple of things first. Knowledge management, as I use it here, is not a software product or a software category. Knowledge management doesn't even start with technology. It starts with business objectives and processes, and a recognition of the need to share information. Knowledge management is nothing more than managing information flow, getting the right information to the people who need it so that they can act on it quickly. It goes back to Michael Dertouzos's idea that information is a verb, not a static noun, and knowledge management is a means, not an end. The end is to increase institutional intelligence, or corporate IQ. In today's dynamic markets, a company needs a high corporate IQ to succeed. By corporate IQ, I don't mean simply having a lot of smart people at your company, although it helps to start with smart people. Corporate IQ is a measure of how easily your company can share information broadly, and of how well people within your organization can build on each other's ideas. Corporate IQ involves sharing both history and current knowledge. Contributions to corporate IQ come from individual learning and from cross-pollination of different people's ideas. The workers in a company with a high corporate IQ collaborate effectively so that all of the key people on a project are well-informed and energized. The ultimate goal is to have a team develop the best ideas from throughout an organization and then act with the same unity of purpose and focus that a single, well-motivated person would bring to bear on a situation. Digital information flow can bring about this group cohesiveness. A company's high-level executives need to believe in knowledge sharing, or even a major effort in knowledge will fail. Leaders must further show that they themselves are not locked in an ivory tower, isolated from everyone else, but are willing to engage with employees. Jack Nasser, automotive operations president at Ford, sends email every Friday afternoon to 89,000 Ford employees worldwide, sharing the week's news, the good and the bad, with everybody. No one screens the email. He talks straight to the employees. He also reads the hundreds of responses he gets each month and assigns a member of his team to reply to any that need follow-up. I don't send out weekly reports, but I do email employees worldwide on major topics. Like Jack Nasser, I read all the email that employees send me, and I pass items on to people for action. I find unsolicited mail an incredibly good way to stay aware of the attitudes and issues affecting the many people who work at Microsoft. We also use Windows Media Player, which continuously streams audio and video across the corporate network or the Internet, in order to broadcast press and industry events to employees. Because the client machine does not have to download all the content before playing it, streaming media reduces the wait time and storage requirements on the user's PC. Having established an atmosphere that encourages collaboration and knowledge sharing, business leaders need to set up specific knowledge sharing projects across the organization and make knowledge sharing an integral part of the work itself, not an add-on frill that can safely be ignored. Then leaders need to ensure that the people who share knowledge are rewarded. The old saying, "knowledge is power," sometimes makes people hoard knowledge. They believe that knowledge hoarding makes them indispensable. Power comes not from knowledge kept, but from knowledge shared. A company's values and reward system should reflect that idea. Knowledge management can help any business in four major areas: planning, customer service, training, and project collaboration. If you haven't done any explicit work on knowledge management in your company yet, consider picking one or two areas in which to launch knowledge management projects. You can use the success of your projects in those areas to encourage knowledge management projects in your other business areas. Within a few years, all leading companies will have achieved levels of digitally charged knowledge sharing that are on par with the ones I describe in this chapter. Supporting cross-border brand planning. No company has a better-known brand than the Coca-Cola Company, which makes four of the world's five top-selling soft drinks. About two-thirds of Coca-Cola's sales and nearly 80% of its profits come from international markets. Coke uses technology to create a flow of information that supports its most important business planning function and worldwide brand management, and not just for its carbonated drinks. Coke has more than 160 brands of beverages that include juices, teas, coffee, sports drinks, and milk-based drinks across almost every country in the world. Coke was one of the first companies to establish worldwide communication with its own custom email system in the 1980s. In 1997, CIO Bill Harold conducted the company's first-ever information technology strategy review to make sure its technology was aligned with the company's business strategy. In the course of the review, the company realized that despite its earlier investments, it too often treated information technology as an expense to control, rather than as an enabler of better business. As a result of this realization, the thinking at Coke moved from "how much can we save?" to "how much can we browshare globally so that we don't have to reinvent the wheel?" From this review came initiatives to standardize the worldwide desktop environment, applications, the network operating system, the database system, and the Coca-Cola system's entire technology architecture. The worldwide system for information flow has consolidated the company's business process for research, brand planning, and global marketing. Marketing has usurped finance as the biggest user of information technology at Coca-Cola. Where cost analysis was once the primary motive for information gathering, now it's consumer and market analysis. If Coke wants to understand why people in the Bronx drink half as much Coke as consumers on Staten Island, or compare Coke consumption in France to Coke consumption in Belgium, marketers use its analytical tool, Information for Marketing, or INFORM, to examine the data. Ethnic composition, penetration of sugar-sweetened or carbonated soft drinks in the market, brand relevance, and other demographics. The INFORM tool integrates data from the company's own sales and marketing sources with data from research sources such as Nielsen, focus groups, and UN-supplied country per capita incomes. INFORM shows what's going on by country or multiple countries and by brand information, volume share, preference imagery, why consumers consume and purchase certain brands. Sales data is available on INFORM by market, outlet, time period, or location. INFORM incorporates more than 1,000 research studies on how to determine company or brand preference levels in a particular country. INFORM can tell you what types of people in a specific township in South Africa are daily drinkers of Sprite and what their total daily consumption was last March. All of this information makes it possible for Coke to develop better marketing plans across many countries and to develop very targeted new products. Coca-Cola Japan, for instance, produces more than 25 new soft drink, tea, and coffee products a year. It needs good information tools to plan these products and evaluate their success. While brand planning has gone on at Coke for decades, the different Coke companies used to collect their research data in different ways. Some data was quantitative, some was qualitative, some was a mix of both. The different kinds of data resulted in huge variations in brand plans in the 200 countries Coke sells in. Now the brand plans grow out of informed data. A new planning system contains 150 questions to be answered in all brand plans and organizes the information according to repeating processes. What is the per capita income? Percentage of disposable income spent on beverages? Market penetration of carbonated soft drinks? Inform ensures that each planner considers these questions by taking the planner to the related data. This instant data access enables the user to develop a brand plan quickly. A planner seldom has to ask for manual research, and the planner learns from previous research and the accumulated corporate wisdom. A planner in Zimbabwe who wants to figure out the best way to launch Sprite in his country might discover that a Coke marketer in Thailand launched the same product 6 months ago. The Zimbabwean marketer can review the results of the earlier launch and even email the Thai planner to discuss the fine points. When planning is completed, the business plan and its supporting material are stored together in one place. Inform ensures that every planner covers the same comprehensive steps in building a brand plan, but a corollary goal is for each planner to add his or her unique thinking to what has gone before. Coke wants to continually improve the quality of thinking throughout its system. Information sharing also supports the company's global ad campaigns, about 250 ads a year, 50 for brand Coke alone. The company's global brand process uses a standard methodology to test ads by market. Using Inform, a marketing brand manager can search the global pool of tested ads to find ads appropriate for the attributes of a particular target population group or country. The marketer can usually even determine whether to customize the ending to make the ad locally relevant. Because information tools such as Inform spread learning in the organization, new Coke employees or recent transfers come up to speed faster. People aren't dependent on knowing people in the research group or in a certain city. The same information and planning templates are available worldwide. The company can transfer a brand manager from France to Argentina and expect the initial quality of work to be much higher than it might have been in the past. We use our consumer information system to enable business disciplines and manage the routines across borders, says Tom Long, Vice President and Director of Strategic Marketing at Coke. We use our information to help us gain best practices from what we do over and over: brand planning, business planning, advertising testing, and consumer image analysis. Technology enables us to take new people, point them to where the information is, and have them deliver a robust business plan. Inform was initially developed in 1995-96, and Coke employees started using it widely in 1997. Users of Inform increased from 400 headquarters-based marketers to more than 2,500 general managers, researchers, brand managers, and mid-level marketing staff worldwide by mid-1998. The information system has resulted not in leaner staffs, but in smarter staffs who focus on anticipating the market rather than reacting to it. In fact, because of Inform, Coke puts a higher premium on human thought. Information enables good employees to shine. Information creates accountability. Information eliminates excuses. The brand planning tool comes with no brains included. You get great information that you add value to, Tom Long says. This has raised our expectations of how knowledge should be used. We move from description to explanation. It's the explanatory whys of consumer behavior that marketers now have to uncover to repeatedly deliver results. Inform gets us to that focus. We take information to new levels of insight. Speeding customer response. When customers need answers to important product questions, a company often has to scramble behind the scenes to get them the answers. Both Yamanouchi Pharmaceuticals, at $3.9 billion, the third largest pharmaceutical company in Japan, and Microsoft have made web-based information systems a key component in improving the quality and timelessness of answers to customers' tough technical questions. Product support personnel at Yamanouchi can immediately answer about half the questions that come in from doctors or pharmacists. To find the answers to more difficult questions, they use Yamanouchi's web-based Product Information Center Supporting System, or Princess. Using optical storage for some documents and a real-time search engine, Princess enables support personnel to do sophisticated electronic searches on products and keywords. They transfer urgent questions they can't answer to product experts. Less urgent queries are emailed to experts who have a goal to respond within 1 to 7 days. Results are relayed to the customer and entered into Princess for future use. To ensure follow-up, every question is tracked electronically. In 1998, Yamanouchi made this product information system available to its sales representatives over its internal website, improving their access to information and their ability to support customers, and reducing the load on the call center. The obvious next step would be to make the knowledge base directly available to doctors and pharmacists, but for now, such publishing could be construed under Japanese law as illegal pharmaceutical advertising. The Japanese government is working on guidelines that will make posting the knowledge base possible. Information gleaned by the call center has enabled Yamanouchi to provide more information on the administration of some medicines to doctors and pharmacists up front, and has prompted Yamanouchi to arrange for an extra trial for one medication. Long term, Yamanouchi has high expectations for collaboration in general among all of its offices in Japan, Europe, and the United States. The company believes it may be possible one day to implement a system that would automatically notify the right people, according to the circumstances, and automatically set up tasks and deadlines, according to the information reported. Like Yamanouchi, Microsoft uses a web-based tool to ensure timely responses to complex questions coming into our product groups from our sales representatives, support engineers, and technical account managers worldwide. Such questions can hold up a customer's purchase decision or halt a deployment, so Rich Tong, Vice President of Applications Product Management, has for several years driven his teams to a crisp objective. 90% of all questions from the field must be answered within 48 hours. Product managers at Microsoft live frantic lives, giving presentations to customers, doing research, tracking and supporting sales, talking with the press, creating marketing materials, and working with program managers to define future product releases. Even with high-level management pressure and the ability to divide questions up among team members, getting product managers to reply within 48 hours has been a challenge. Now a field sales representative can go to the info desk website, pick a product or an issue from a drop-down list, and submit the question. The question, along with the representative's contact information, is logged into a database. Representatives can also submit questions even when they are at a customer site or traveling. A representative immediately receives return email with a log number and the name of the team that will handle the question. When a question arrives, the database triggers the messaging system to email the appropriate product manager. If the product manager hasn't answered within 48 hours, both he and his manager receive regular email reminders until someone replies. Any manager can query InfoDesk to view open questions, even to track questions that may have been forwarded one or more times. When another team member is asked to contribute to a reply, he receives email and a link to the website for additional information. InfoDesk provides query management statistics as well. If a team complains about receiving too many questions, for instance, Rich or any of the management staff can quickly see whether the numbers show that they really do get more questions per person. In addition to receiving a response, each sales representative receives an online questionnaire about the timeliness, quality, and sales effectiveness of the answer. Answers must satisfy the sales force. You can't get away with a fast but lousy answer. Most of the comments that come back are positive. When they aren't, managers have the information they need to ensure that a product manager does better next time. InfoDesk is more than just a place for salespeople to submit questions. A section answering the frequently asked questions, facts, cuts down on the number of repeat questions. Links to other internal resources and information provide a rich knowledge store for our sales force. InfoDesk now has about 20,000 questions and answers in a database going back 3 years. This trove of information not only has helped us with particular questions, but also has helped us track trends. Analysis of questions allows us to improve our website, perhaps creating a new category or generating new pages for issues such as the year 2000. It's particularly valuable for us in tracking field activity during product beta tests. Questions from the field have led us to make product changes or improve documentation, and they've helped us resolve licensing and pricing questions before a product became broadly available. Taking the pain out of training. Training is the most basic and sometimes most overlooked form of knowledge sharing that needs to go on in a company. Sometimes it seems impossible for busy people to find the time for classes, though. Finding out what courses are available can be difficult. Registering for a course is time-consuming. The training often requires you to leave your office for long stretches of time, and class hours never take an unexpected business problem into account. A well-designed online training management tool can eliminate these obstacles to employee training. An online category of courses and an online registration system take the pain out of class registration. People can view course descriptions and the dates and times the courses are offered, find out whether a class is full and how long the waiting list is, and ask to be notified by email when particular classes they're interested in will be offered. When people register online, they can add a class to their electronic schedules with the click of a button. When the course is over, each participant can be sent an electronic survey to evaluate the course's effectiveness. Freed of managing most of the logistics, trainers and administrators can concentrate on class content. We use such a system at Microsoft, and colleges and universities are adopting similar systems to handle basic course registration. Even more significant, online systems allow an employee to take training courses at his desk, at his own pace, and when his schedule permits. Multimedia streaming technology is a great tool for self-paced training. Streaming technology enables the use of audio and video information over corporate networks or the Internet. The presentations can use PowerPoint slides to complement the video and audio. The streaming media format is most appropriate for courses that have long shelf lives and a broad audience in the company. Another good training technology is online chat, which makes the live session interactive and can be recorded for employees who view the session later. The ability to electronically annotate multimedia presentations with comments by later viewers creates living content. Training companies themselves are using streaming media to conduct classes over the Internet. US Web, a company that specializes in training people to use technology in business, has developed Sitecast to broadcast interactive seminars. Attendees can view the sessions and participate through chat technologies, and they can replay the sessions when they want to. Online training has been really popular at Microsoft. In 1998, online participation increased 5 times faster than classroom participation, and total online participation was more than double our physical class attendance. This increase indicates to us that people want to improve their knowledge and job skills, but simply haven't had time-efficient ways to get training before. Streaming media makes it possible for our product experts and executives at headquarters to present information and training to any employee anywhere in the world. Managing product development. Digital information flow can really help in the collaboration required to improve products. Through years of internal and external benchmarking, Nabisco has created leading-edge development processes that have produced some of the most popular snack food brands in the world and made the company number one or number two in nearly every category in which it competes. Its 1997 revenues were $8.7 billion. Historically, roughly a third of Nabisco's new products become blockbuster successes. A third do okay, and another third underperform. These results are better than the industrial average. Only 20% of new products introduced to grocery store shelves each year succeed. But with competition increasing, and with 40 to 60 new product projects going on at any one time, each team involving about 8 core people and another 30 stakeholders, Nabisco realized that it needed to use information technology to get a competitive advantage in its product development process. Lots of ideas for new food products are spurred by market research, by what the competition is doing, and by developments in food science. The hard part is determining what to do with ideas after they pop up. It was the winnowing and refining process that Nabisco wanted to improve. Nabisco didn't need a new product development process. Nabisco needed information technology that would enable it to follow its existing rules of when and how to proceed with development and dramatically improve its success rate. The technology needed to provide well-defined checkpoints, improve communication among team members, and enable people to make decisions with all the facts available. To meet these requirements, Nabisco created Journey, an electronic product development system. Using email on the desktop and email and database technology on the server, Journey organizes the project information that used to be in the file cabinets or scattered around on team members' hard disks and in people's heads. A rigorous set of security features grants or denies authorization to peek into a project. Say that Nabisco is investigating the feasibility of coming out with a new ginger lemon cookie. The core people on the ginger lemon team represent product development, manufacturing, marketing, sales, and finance. Another 20 people are attached to the project as stakeholders: managers, field people, finance people, teams working on related ideas, and so on. Anytime a project member wants to communicate with the other core team members or with the larger group of stakeholders, he does it through Journey. When the product manager clicks on the Ginger Lemon project, he can review all the information related to the project by clicking on the appropriate electronic tab. He can see financial analyses and market research. He can see status updates with a chronological, up-to-the-minute listing of all milestones, past, present, and future. He can see current activities. The cookie is entering its first round of focus group testing today. Financials will be completed this Friday. R&D is testing a more lemony filling. An electronic discussion forum might include debate about current hot topics such as advertising strategy, how much lemon, and fat content. All other supporting documents for the project are stored as well. In addition, it would be easy to add another tab to invoke full-featured project collaboration software to access Gantt charts or other visual displays of what tasks depend on other ones, or detailed analyses of the duration of the project and resource assignments. Recently, during the development of one product, the manufacturing team reported a problem. The product developed an undesirable texture during baking tests. Rather than conduct a traditional, limited dialogue among themselves, try adjusting the oven temperature, manufacturing entered the problem into the Journey forum for discussion. Journey immediately notified the entire project team by email, designated urgent. R&D got involved and offered a solution. Add a new ingredient to modify the texture. Another team member reminded everybody that the addition of a new ingredient would involve a packaging revision. Packaging got involved and made the change. In the end, the problem was solved in a few days, versus the weeks or months it might have taken the old sequential process to play out. Establishing firm go-no-go guidelines. Beyond serving as a repository for project documents and information on project activities, Journey incorporates the business rules that guide Nabisco's new product development efforts, how the company defines financial success, what kinds of jobs and volumes the company's bakeries are set up to handle, what scores a product has to achieve in consumer tests, what manufacturing costs should be. Journey evaluates whether new equipment has to be purchased and whether that equipment can be reused for other products. The application has the intelligence to monitor a project's compliance with the rules, move the project along from stage to stage, notify everyone of the next step, and ensure that someone immediately reviews the product if it doesn't make the grade at some critical juncture. If the Ginger Lemon cookie falls short of the minimal consumer test score, for example, Journey notifies key project members and stakeholders by email so that an immediate review takes place. When the new review is posted on the system, Journey notifies the people who need to read it so that they can determine whether the project should proceed to the next stage. Before Journey, an enthusiastic team might find a way to brush past poor consumer test scores or manage not to hear warnings from the bakery that the product would be too complicated to produce. Today, Journey provides firm, quantitative go-no-go hurdles that every team must negotiate before proceeding to the next step. Exceptions are possible. Nabisco might decide to greenlight a project that will be low volume overall but strong in certain regions, for instance. Once a project is done, Journey serves as a central archive, keeping all project documentation in corporate memory. If somebody starts thinking about another lemon cookie idea down the road and wants to tap into the corporate brain to find out about earlier efforts, he or she can find all the documentation, organized by topic. In the first year and a half after the system rolled out, Nabisco's trial budgets are down by a third. Nabisco has been able to eliminate marginal projects before they got to the trial phase and concentrate on trials for a smaller number of products with better prospects. Eileen Murphy, Nabisco's Senior Director for New Product Development, says, "Any good new products program should be a Darwinian competition in which projects compete for scarce internal resources. Some projects live and evolve, and some die, pushed aside by stronger projects. Journey has changed the rules of the competition from one based partially on facts and partially on the persuasiveness of the team leader to one based primarily on facts, the same kinds of facts for every project." Gazing into an unexpected crystal ball. A serendipitous benefit of Journey is that Nabisco now has the information it needs to create a full portfolio view of new development projects. Senior managers can quickly and easily see what they have in the pipeline and determine whether the company has the right product mix for the near and the long terms. Putting together or updating a rolling 18-month aggregate plan used to be an enormous task that required someone to check with all project teams, track down numbers, and knit information together manually. Journey does this automatically by generating a web-based report that lays out project milestones along a timeline. In addition to this high-level view, managers can get project-specific information by drilling down on a project. Using Journey, Nabisco has been able to identify gaps in product lines 2 to 3 years out, in time for the company to speed up projects or come up with new ideas to fill the void and keep the product portfolio balanced. Its ability to provide an extended view of Nabisco's product plans was an unexpected but tremendous discovery. Product gaps directly impact our revenues, Eileen Murphy explains. With Journey, we can take action early to ensure that we are well positioned to capitalize on potential changes in consumer tastes. Now, when Nabisco asks the three key questions of any new product idea, does the consumer want it? Can we make it? Can we make it at a profit? Journey helps Nabisco ensure that the answers are yes before it proceeds. Investing in your greatest asset. In addition to realizing the management and financial benefits of Journey, Nabisco has seen the morale of its employees rise. An employee in any company can spend a lot of time just trying to find out what's going on and seeing that other people get notified too. Spinning your wheels is one of the biggest frustrations of employment. Using an application like Journey, team members can find out what's going on with a few keystrokes. They can find out what the problems are and make suggestions that won't get lost. They can see how all the pieces of a project fit together. Everyone, not just the project leader, can see the big picture. These benefits are hard to measure, but they go a long way in motivating employees. To recruit and retain smart people, you need to make it easy for them to collaborate with other smart people. That makes for a stimulating, energized workplace. A collaborative culture, reinforced by information flow, makes it possible for smart people all over a company to be in touch with each other. When you get a critical mass of high IQ people working in concert, the energy level shoots way up. Cross-stimulation brings on new ideas, and less experienced employees are pulled along to a higher level. The company as a whole works smarter. Knowledge management won't work, though, unless it's a goal that informs every team's business planning and processes, and unless employees are rewarded for sharing information. At the end of each consulting engagement, we require a Microsoft consultant to post technology solutions to a central web location called Insight for the benefit of other technical employees, and we evangelize the use of Insight to reduce preparation time and risk in consulting engagements. In performance reviews, product managers are graded on the speed and quality of their team's responses to field queries, and salespeople are graded on how well they maintain up-to-date information in our customer tracking system. At Coke, knowledge management is one consideration for job performance, and senior managers who evaluate marketing plans also review the collaborative resources such as Inform that went into the project. Nabisco does 360-degree performance reviews in which employees are critiqued by everyone around them. If someone is not sharing information or not building on the information of others, that fact will show up in job reviews. Exercise your ingenuity to reward people for making an information investment in the company. Texas Instruments awards the "Not Invented Here, But I Did It Anyway" prize to encourage information sharing. Some companies use inducements such as a night on the town, department store gift certificates, or handheld computers to encourage salespeople to take the time to fill in good data for customer tracking systems. We gave away Insight polo shirts to the first several hundred contributing authors to help prime the site with quality technical content, and we gave financial awards for the top 10 contributions, as judged by employees who can rate the usefulness of submissions with an electronic voting button on the website. Nabisco has a success-sharing program which rewards information sharing every month, and an annual Chairman's Award for team accomplishments. Winners get recognition and money. Wide recognition and even a modest monetary award can go a long way toward creating a spirit of knowledge sharing at any company. Perhaps the biggest incentive for our sales staff to keep our customer database up to date is the knowledge that senior managers, up to and including me, regularly review the customer information provided by the sales force. And budget reviews are based on the information. Salespeople know that their information is being used. They see maintaining the database not as busy work, but as a way to help advance our business and their sales. Think of knowledge management as an investment in intellectual capital that will ultimately lead to a higher corporate IQ, an enhanced ability of your company to get the best collective thought and action. The idea of intellectual capital is more than a management concept. Intellectual capital is the intrinsic value of the intellectual property of your company and the knowledge your people have. Properly managing this capital raises your corporate IQ and could have a major impact on your company's valuation. More and more, financial analysts are looking beyond a company's physical assets and current market presence to how it manages its intellectual property and its intellectual resources. Financial analysts are betting that companies with well-managed intellectual capital will be market leaders for years to come, regardless of where they are today, and are valuing companies accordingly. Applying technology to knowledge needs. Any sophisticated application of knowledge management will involve a number of building blocks. The systems for knowledge management in this chapter's examples use different combinations of numerical analysis technology, databases, product or marketing information documents, files, and formal routing and task checkoff software, email and workflow applications, and most include ad hoc search capabilities, web technology. Back when the projects cited here were started, the world of databases was separate from the world of email, which was separate from the world of the web. Each of these projects built on the technology most central to its needs and did a good job of integrating the other technologies. In the future, you won't have to think about which building block to start with. Software technology is bringing together the richness of database, document, and workflow applications to make solutions much easier to build than before. For today, be sure that any solution you build or buy supports PC and Internet standards so that the solution can easily plug and play with other technologies as your needs evolve. You want to be sure, for instance, that numerical data and non-numerical data can be accessed together. Too often objective data, such as monthly sales numbers, is in a rigid format, and you can't simultaneously get to both the numbers and the subjective data, such as focus group transcripts or project postmortems. If you can't integrate all of the information, separate communication channels develop, and extra energy goes into tracking down the different kinds of data. The worldwide information sharing that Coke practices, or the coherent flow of product development work within Nabisco, simply could not occur without digital information flow. Coke wanted to make a fundamental cultural and business shift.